your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 99 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. Look here, after that song, Down Home, I almost say for fresh bread. We got to go to the hospital because that's where they make in the hospital bread. Perhaps the best bread in the Bahamas. But these are the things that you remember when you love Down Home. So I welcome you on this Wednesday, the 23rd of February, 2022. So On the Clock with Erin Green. On the Clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the Clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. I've got a jam-packed show today. I'm just going to share with you from the break. My guests are Bradley Watson and Leanna Burrows from Friends of the Environment and the Abaco Science Alliance Conference, and Mr. Matt Aubrey from the Organization for Responsible Governance. And there's lots to talk about today. In fact, there's so much in the newspaper to talk about. Hopefully, we can sort of intersect some of those topics with what we're talking about. Boy, so much in the news. And Matt, look at that. Sometimes the universe has pulled you in the direction it wants you to go into, you know, because I swear I lost the front cover of The Guardian just now. But you guys gotta grab The Guardian today. If you can't grab a physical copy, you gotta get online and delve into those stories. There are some very, very important stories in there. And I guess maybe after the break, I'm going to grab another Guardian and we're going to go into that. So, Matt, I'm glad that you're in studio with me today. Good morning, Bradley and Leanna in the Zoom room. How are you? Can't hear anything, producer? Oh, boy. So we're waiting for you guys to get into the Zoom room. Mr. Aubrey is here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk with you in the second part of the segment of the show so we could talk about the Good Governance Symposium 2022, sort of in relation to some of the stories in the paper today. But that's okay. Let's begin right now and tell us about the Good Governance Symposium. Now, is this the first annual?
This is the first we've ever had. As a not-for-profit, we are dependent upon funding. We're able to get one of the local foundations to support this. People are doing a lot to volunteer their efforts, too. So hopefully it's our first annual, but it's definitely the first we've ever had. And I think what's key, the good governance is really a platform that the organization follows. And it's really fundamentally not just about looking at government and whether government's good, it's about the decisions that are being made within our government, about the way that policies are developed and how they affect you on a day-to-day basis. So when we talk about good governance, it's not just holding the government accountable, although that is part of it. We advocate for transparency and accountability, but it's also making sure that citizens are a part of that process and that policies are developed in a way that's equitable, in a way that is responsive, and a way that reflects that citizens have a key role. Government itself recognizes that it can't do everything to address all the issues that we're dealing with. And we know in the Bahamas we have so many long-standing social, economic issues. So what our organization is focusing on is how do we get to those long-term solutions? And it keeps coming back that we need all of these key stakeholders at the table. We need civil society groups like our partners that are going to talk in just a few minutes. We need government officials that are well-trained and positioned. We need private sector folks that are putting forward the innovation and driving the economy and jobs. We need folks from academia. We need folks from media who help to tell those stories. All of us have a role, and this symposium is a platform for all those folks to come together and talk about topics like freedom of information and anti-corruption and how to facilitate more women in leadership in political positions and more youth involvement in governance and how we reform the public service. So all these topics are going to be looked at from a different level of perspective, and they create an opportunity for us to kind of set this moment in time and move forward. So we really want folks to participate either online, because we'll be Zooming it, so you can go to Org Bahamas Foundation and get the information of how to register on Zoom and participate, like Erin Green will be doing at home safely in her living room. Or we do actually have a few in-person attendance slots. So if folks are interested in coming out and joining the sessions, it's 9 to 5. Give us a call. Reach out to us at info@orgbahamas.com. Let us know, and then we can get you the information and get you set up. But it's something for everyone, and it's a critical opportunity to make sure your voice is part of this process.
Absolutely. Now, you know what I realized in doing the research, looking at the info for the event, I realized that this concept, the culture of good governance and good governance itself, isn't just relegated to politics. Right, and to that sort of administrative administration of the country space, that professional spaces, business spaces, particularly leaders, human resource managers, should really be clued in to this discussion, because governance isn't just about running a country and running your people. It's about managing or governing an environment or a space.
And I think that's a critical point, the levels. And you want consistency. The things you would expect from your business, you would expect from your government. You would expect from the civil society group that you participate in, right? So we believe that involvement and transparency and accountability, it doesn't just work applied to government. It applies across the board. And that's one of the parts of this discussion that I think is so key. And you raise this often, is do the things we say line up, and are they consistently followed? You know, sometimes we say, hey, this is what we're going to practice, but it doesn't always carry out the same. Sometimes we say one thing that talks about change and new initiatives, but it really manifests in the same scenario we've done time and time again. So the opportunity to look at governance is an opportunity to set forward and be sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, how do we measure governance and evaluate it? And how do you know what is good governance? I was thinking about it. I was sitting under a big dilly tree. So, you know, I was feeling shady. I had a bit of shade about myself. And I was thinking, is it fair to say to contemporary politicians, wannabe MPs, and elected officials, representatives, is it fair to say to them, like, look here, a man like A.D. Hanna is an example of good governance? Or if you examine the career of an A.D. Hanna, you'll see many examples of good governance, or someone that understood what good governance was. And A.D. Hanna is a guy that eventually, or at one point, nobody would even nominate against him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're told that that's because of the quality of his leadership. Everybody it just didn't need to be challenged. And so how do we measure that?
Governance is, I think it's a slippery topic, right? I think that there are things like good governance indexes that are looked at globally, and we do use that as a framework to measure where we are against other jurisdictions. But the reality is, it's important to think about what does governance mean here in the Bahamas. And I think it's an ever-changing space. We have to look at past leaders who have done this well. We don't have such a long history that you can't reflect on the fact that A.D. Hanna and other leaders did wonderful things. How that holds up with today's modern environment, I think, is different. And I think we do have to think about in our current environment. So we just saw instances talked about in the newspaper where one side says that this side didn't do what they were supposed to, the other side does the other one. And we get caught in this back and forth, and the general public is left to think, well, I'm just going to let those in power sort it out. But governance today in our world requires more involvement by the citizen. So you have to be a more critical thinker. You have to be able to take the risk and put your voice in. You have to make sure that it's not just about the political party, and so you just wait until they get in power and then you're going to be taken care of, that you have to help and be an active part of it beyond just the voting.
Yeah.
So when we think about governance historically, what we have thought about is its reflection to leaders, that leaders govern and hence they should be held to certain principles. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, governance applies to all of us,
and we all
need to be a part of that process.
Right, and not just that, citizens set the stage, right?
Right.
Like, yes, leaders govern, but citizens create the parameters by which they want to be governed.
And it's not just holding the government's feet to the fire, although that's part of it. The truth is, the solutions to community-based problems lie in the community. When you're figuring out, okay, our park is not safe for our children, you can't from an outside perspective come in and say, well, I'm going to clean up that park and sort it out and fix it for those people in the community. You need the community to own, well, we know what time the risks happen. We know that the garbage that accumulates comes from these types of places, that there's not lighting in this area, and these are the types of things. Whatever it might be, you need the citizens' involvement, not just to say, hey, you said you would fix it, but hey, by the way, we have some thoughts about how it can be fixed and kept fixed.
Absolutely. Now, Matt, I think my guests from Abaco just got off the ferry,
great,
and they're in the Zoom room, and I think it's a great transition because you're right, it's not just government's job or their obligation. It requires all of us to step up in some capacity. And our guests, Leanna Burrows and Bradley Watson from Friends of the Environment in Marsh Harbor, Abaco, have come to talk to us today about the Abaco Science Alliance Conference. We're going to talk about some of the work that people are doing to fill their role, their part as either citizen or civil society member in this function of governance.
And civil society entities are crucial in this. And Friends of the Environment is a phenomenal one. I'm big fans of their work. And they've been doing some amazing things in some really tough circumstances. So that's also notable.
Yes, and now the only thing I'm going to critique them about today is their focus on animals and not the focus on dillies and mangoes. But other than that, we're good. Good morning, Bradley and Leanna. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry, we connect.
I thought you were going to make a point about how we need to focus on society more, but you went straight to the dillies and mangoes, so you're a real greenie.
Yeah, man, that's the foundation of a solid, sustainable country, dillies and mangoes,
elephants,
and things that live in the bush and in the mangroves. And I'm really pleased to see that citizens and civil society and Abaco are still working, not just for themselves, but on behalf of the whole country. So please tell us about Science Alliance Conference that's taking place today.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. This is Leanna Burrows. I am the Outreach Coordinator of Friends of the Environment in Abaco. Really excited to be here today. And thank you for your words, Matt and Aaron. That was really great. Just a little bit about us. We are a Bahamian nonprofit that was founded over 30 years ago. And our focus is mainly on environmental education within school groups and as well as in communities. And we started officially our education program in 2006. And since then, we've reached over 23,000 students through presentations in school, as well as field trips and our own programs like after school clubs and summer camps. So we truly believe that environmental education is key in, you know, creating environmental ambassadors for not just our Bahamas. Our mission at Friends is to preserve the environment of Abaco through education, conservation, and research facilitation. And like you said, we have a really big event today, the Abaco Science Alliance Conference. This is going to be our first one in a few years. It's typically biennial, and we were supposed to have it in January of 2020, but unfortunately, due to Hurricane Dorian, as well as COVID, we were not in a position to do so. So we're super excited to be bringing it back today via Zoom. And Bradley is actually one of our speakers today, so it's exciting to have him here with us. And basically, scientists who have committed to research in Abaco despite Hurricane Dorian and COVID will be presenting their work over the past few years. So we'll have presentations on seagrass beds, resilience of bottlenose dolphins, mangrove recovery, evolutionary effects of hurricanes on the brown anole, coral reef health, as well as a biodiversity conservation with Bradley. And we have national as well as international organizations who will be presenting today at this conference.
Listen, did you say the resilience of bottlenose dolphins? That's what you
yes,
said?
Yes, I did.
Because look here, I thought you were saying that we had a problem with dolphins developing an alcohol, alcoholism because people keep throwing these beer bottles in the ocean. But I'm glad it's not that.
No. This is a study, the resilience of bottlenose dolphins to the impacts of climate change.
So hold on, it's not just me who would be chilly in the winter. Even the dolphins are saying, look, it's too cold. We come to the Bahamas to get warm, and this is not working out?
We will learn today.
Well, listen, that's fantastic because to be honest with you, I think the general attitude among Bahamians about sea life is that they could handle anything happening in the water. I talk to a lot of fishermen, right? And they're convinced it don't matter what you do to the ocean, the life in it is going to survive because that's how God intended it. And that's how that's what is supposed to happen. But it's important for people to realize that they are impacted and we may not be able to see the impact with our own eyes or measure it in our own lifetime. It's are indeed happening.
Aaron, you touched on a point right there, a very, very serious point, because, you know, for the longest time, we assumed that the ocean would be, impervious to any sort of damage we can do to it. But when you say that we might not see it in our lifetimes, we have to recognize that we are seeing it right now. And you talk about, this Bahamian connection to the ocean. I really hope that, we could show that some of our work has been moving towards an understanding of nature where we recognize its value, even in our laws, et cetera, as Matt might have referenced when we talk about governance. But that IDB grant that came through for the $200 million investment in the blue economy in the Bahamas is recognition of the importance of us developing a sustainable way to utilize our marine resources. And as a population, we have to understand that we are a coastal nation, you know. So we can't think about the ocean as just somebody who could just take all of our, trash and take all of the damage we do to it and just continue to give us, you know. We have to look at it a different way. So, man, you had me going there.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for reminding me of the $200 million because I'm going to UB School of Linguistics, right? And I'm going to tell them they have to teach me how to speak dolphin. And I'm going to go train some dolphins to run some inter-island emergency medical transshipment service because the government need help. The government need help, and me and these dolphins, we're going to do it. So tell me, how can we register or watch the conference online?
Sure. So if you visit Friends of the Environment social media accounts on our Facebook or Instagram, it's at Friends of the Environment. you will see the registration link for the Zoom webinar.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take place today from 12 to 2 p.m.
Okay. And so for young people and older people who want to connect, who want to find a way to help, particularly for people who are in the media, reading stories about the slow pace of recovery in Abaco and want to do something and don't know what to do, how can they connect with your organization and what volunteer opportunities exist right now for people?
Right. So I would suggest for sure, in order to connect, they can visit our website, environment.org. And we are posting updates about volunteer opportunities that may happen. Right now, we are part of the Northern Bahamas Mangrove Restoration Project. And that's a partnership with Bahamas National Trust, the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, and MANG. And so this is a great volunteer opportunity right now that will be talked about today at the Abaco Science Alliance Conference, where community members can volunteer their time to help with planting new mangroves. Because as many people may not know, Abaco and Grand Bahama lost a great deal of their mangrove coverage through Hurricane Dorian. So this project is a multi-year project working to restore the population that was lost. So we post updates about that on our website as well as our social media pages. And I would just say to share that awareness that, you know, Abaco and Grand Bahama are still recovering from Hurricane Dorian. And while it may not be talked about as much anymore, we're still living in that recovery every day.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, at ORG, we talk a lot about the importance of citizen participation in governance. So understanding your environment, understanding the systems that you're working within. But what we know is that citizen science, which is fundamentally what's being presented here, getting more in touch with what is going on in your physical environment, what are the things happening around you and how do you fit into the ecosystem, is a great step towards citizen participation. I know, you know, participating with groups like Friends of the Environment and BNT and Young Marine Explorers and Brief and ReEarth, this is a great way to get involved and be connected to something that is probably a passion for many folks and they don't know how to have an impact. And then you clearly see how your direct actions have an impact on something that may unfortunately manifest in your lifetime or in your children's lifetime that is negative and may limit our opportunities.
Absolutely. I'm restraining, you know, I'm glad that y'all animal rights activists are out there. In the time that Matt was speaking, I already envisioned a plan for world domination in the blue economy, of course.
I thought you goes in dillies from island to island. I mean, I liked that you said, you know, medical relief, but you think about the medical benefits of mangoes and dillies.
You have to sell it. You got to sell it to the people. You convince them that it's for them, too. And so I want to say thank you guys very, very much. And we can turn to, if I remind the audience, we can go to friendsoftheenvironment.com or to Friends of the Environment on Facebook for the registration information, for contact information. And if we're unable to tune in today, possibly to find a recording of the panels from the conference.
Yes, you will be able to find the recorded version on our website as well as our YouTube channel.
All right, Bradley Watson, tell us again the title of your presentation today.
Today, I will be talking about how we lost so many Bahama warblers that we had to appeal to have them listed as an endangered species. And so then from there, we began to do work to address this from a community level to empower citizens to be a part of this conservation activity. And some of those citizens actually developed a business post-COVID. So when you talk about having these dolphins go move mangoes and dillies,
you know,
you're not far off, actually. We have to all get involved in this blue economy.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Imagine that. Just before you go, just a couple of days ago, I was with my neighbor picking jujus. Now we hunting because it's the last of the jujus on the tree.
End of it.
And the juju tree is magical because its leaves actually camouflage its fruit, right? So he's doing a good job of hiding them, but he has his grandson with him. And the grandson doesn't care about anything that we're doing because he's just listening to the birds sing to each other from tree to tree. And that little baby, I know that he could understand what they were saying, right? Because you could see him respond to the change in tone as if he was following their conversation. So we absolutely have to figure out what's happened to the warbler and how we're going to keep she safe.
Well, I think, and Bradley, you can tell me if this is correct, but also those birds, they pass the seeds. So we have a yard, and the birds come in, and they eat all those seeds, and they pass them throughout. And once those camalomies plant and land, it stabilizes the ground, and we're less apt for erosion, and it keeps us on a more stable climate session. If they're not there to distribute them, then we're putting ourselves and the things that keep us safe on land at risk.
Wow, absolutely. Bradley and Leanna, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And I'm going to have to get home and tune in. I need to find out what's happening with the Bahamian warbler. It's a problem. And we all got to focus on it. Thank you again. And any last words?
Well, thank you very much. I would be remiss if I didn't note that I represent the Bahamas National Trust. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently working as a youth climate ambassador. So that's my definition. But I'm so happy that Friends of the Environment exists, because if without the partnership with Friends, we would never be able to do any of this work in Abaco. And so, thank you very much, Leanna. And thank you very much, Aaron. And it's great to meet you, Matt.
A pleasure, sir.
Absolutely. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you so much. I have to echo what Bradley's saying, is that, we couldn't do a lot of what we do without the partnerships that we have across the Bahamas as well as internationally. Partnerships definitely make it happen for us, and we are really excited about our Abaco Science Alliance conference today, and we hope that some of you will tune in, and thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. Are you all on the ground? Are you both on the ground in Abaco?
Around in Abaco, yes, ma'am.
Mr. Watson, where are you?
I am in Scotland doing a degree in sustainable development, so
boy, you're
looking
so
forward to coming
lucky.
Home.
Anyway, Ms. Burrows, we expect you to go out in the bush and find us some guava jam. We heard you all have guava jam trees. The guava jam has just come straight off the tree. That's how. Anyway, you guys have a great day.
I hope I can find that too.
Absolutely. And Bradley, stay warm where you are. Thank you so much.
Thank you much. And Aaron, please write the kids' book, because this imagery is fantastic.
Yeah, man.
Thanks.
Absolutely. I will do. Producer, let's go to a break. Matt, when we come back from the break, we're going to delve more into the Good Governance Conference. Okay. And I found my newspaper. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Aaron Green. We'll be right back.
Join the Nassau Guardian as we celebrate International Women's Day, Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. This historical, cultural, and political achievements of women in the Bahamas and around the world. Join us as we celebrate and recognize the outstanding Bahamian women in religion, politics, sports, national security, business, education, and community affairs. For more information, call the Nassau Guardian at 302-2300 or call your account executive. But join us as we celebrate women's achievements, raise awareness against bias during International Women's Day, Tuesday, March 8th, 2022.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Aaron Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
Here we go. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson, the best, always. You're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. If you want to join the discussion, you can text us on the Guardian Radio text line. That's 422-GR96. That's 422-4796, and that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. Or you could call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Now, it's not an open line day. I'm asking people to call in if you want more information about the good governance. Engage, ask questions, make comments about good governance, or if you want to link something that's in the paper, right, to the discussion on good governance, you know, identifying governance culture, how can we shift governance culture to ensure that these things don't happen? That's the type of conversation that I'm looking for today. So I got a text here, Matt, that says, great show as usual, Miss Green. Gas is going up to over $6 because of the war. Them Russians ain't safe. Well, listen, this is the best text ever. You bring politics, global affairs, religion, and war, all, and economics, energy crisis, all into one text. Matt, this is the text. This is the thing,
but,
right?
But this is the point, is that it's all interrelated now. We don't live in a world where we're just in our own little pocket. I mean, there are things we have to consider that are uniquely Bahamian,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, what happens here and what happens out there are connected. And so one of the things we see with governance is that it is changing, right? So something that they're measuring now, governments across the world, and particularly after COVID, is the concept of trust, public trust in government.
Mm-hmm.
And so IDB a couple of weeks ago did a study that looked at public trust in government in the Latin America and Caribbean region. And when they compared what it is in our sector to the rest of the world, we're the lowest in the world. And most of their study was focusing on the Spanish-speaking Caribbean. We haven't yet looked at the English and the French-speaking Caribbean. Mm-hmm. But you would understand that the conditions are probably pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
Small island developing state. We all feel like there's not enough to go around, and so people tend to focus on their own needs and issues. Similarly, a system of government that tends to be more autocratic in its efforts, although it's democratic in its setup, we tend to orient that political parties have most of the power, and the leaders come through those mechanisms, and that's how you get change. And so in that way, it's almost unfair the level of trust that people would have in government, because it's a very one-sided perspective. So we need to think about how we reestablish trust from all sides. You know, the trust of government in its people, trust in private sector, in civil society, civil society's trust of government, and all of that works. You know, trust in the media, because that keeps the engine moving. And that's a modern perspective. That's not necessarily what was the case 40 years ago or even in 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're adapting to a new world where what goes on in other spaces does matter, because we can all hear about it and see about it quickly. We're all aware of a place. We may not be able to pick Ukraine out on a map, but we all know that it's
right.
going to mean I got to put more in my little car, and it's going to cost me a lot more money I don't have.
And ensuring that we have cultures of good governance, right? When we face a situation like this, like you say, you don't know where Ukraine is on the map. You don't speak any Russian.
Right.
You don't know what Putin's middle name is, right? But we have access to the news. We're connected. What cultures of good governance what good governance enables you to do, though, is to prepare your citizens for situations they can't control.
Right.
Right? And so we know that there is global conflict. We know that it's probably a proxy war related around oil, whatever. So we know our oil prices are going to be affected. So good governance then requires us to ensure that citizens have a clear line of communication, that there's a constant or a regular or a frequent broadcast of the price of gas. And you on Monday that on Thursday when the price changes, this is what it's going to be. But at the beginning of January, we're giving you a forecast to help you prepare for February and March, right? We somebody in government or somebody in civil
right.
society is following the news, following the economic and the socioeconomic and the political aspects of the crises or the issue, and they're preparing a discourse, they're preparing a strategy on the ground for people.
And that's why citizens are critical. And part of it is teaching folks to see and understand information as it comes to them. Think about our day-to-day existence. I mean, you read the newspaper, and as a person just walking around Nassau, Grand Bahama, Abaco, you're going to be hit with gas prices are going up, inflation costs more when I go to the grocery store. There's been an increase in crime. We see murders happening. We're inundated with some jobs that are happening, some developments that haven't moved, all the things that affect us day to day. But when you see something like that, gas is going to be $6. You want to then be able to start to pay attention to why that matters and what do we need to do. Moving away our reliance on fossil fuels that you might have seen in an article or read about or heard something, it actually matters. Talking to and letting government know that time when a lot of folks are out of jobs or we're all making less because inflation is going up, what are we going to be doing? So asking the questions about not just how am I going to hurt and do I need to get another job, but what can I be doing in connection with the government that is put in place to make sure that our day-to-day existence continues to be positive and beneficial and allows us to move forward? That is not an easy thing to ask of the day-to-day person who's figuring out, I don't have enough money and there's crime in my neighborhood, my kids, I don't know if they can go to school and what. All of that is tough. So we have to figure out how we very intentionally ask both citizens and government and media and everyone to focus a little bit more on some longer term things. And it doesn't have to be everything, but the thing that matters to you. If you care about that environment, you care about the dirty properties in your neighborhood, that's the thing you need to know about. If you care about education of your kids, that's the thing you need to know about. And not just to know that, hey, this is where the Bahamas is and our ratings on our standardized tests are not what they need to be. No, what do you feel like needs to create an opportunity for your child to grow, develop, and be successful? What do you need to say to the person that you've elected to make sure that they're considering, so that when they get in those cabinet discussions, they're saying, you know what, I remember this person in my community, in my constituency, who said we should be trying more early intervention, talking to kids earlier, getting their language skills better developed, or we should be making sure we have second languages in our schools so that kids are not being left behind on social promotion initiatives, whatever that might be. And it all starts, though, with realizing that governance is someplace that you do have a role, that your ability to change the situation for you, your family, and your community is in being not just aware of what's going on out there, but also having an active role. And government needs to be able to realize that they need to be responsive. And then government then can help to work to develop policies that are more what they call sustainable, because it's not going to change.
Absolutely. Boy, look here. I'm flabbergasted by all that you've said and how little I hear it, right? Like the absence of that in public discourse, the absence of that in policy discourse, right? And I'm not sure if people could see it or not. I'd be in the room to know that you're not talking about it in my absence. I can tell by the way that the room is constructed, right? How the panel is composed, that you're not talking about it. How do we make these conversations more accessible?
Well, our first start, just as a blatant plug, is our symposium, our Good Governance Symposium on Friday. We will have multiple sessions that will engage and bring leaders from government, civil society, and the private sector together to discuss these topics. And it's a start, right? It's an opportunity. So folks who can participate online, they can check us out at our website, orgbahamas.com/goodgovernancesymposium, and you'll see a way to register and follow us along on Zoom. While you're on Zoom, you'll be able to put your comments in, which we will bring forward as to be a part of the discussion. But we also even have, we have some more space, so we can open the door for a few other folks to participate in person and make sure your voice is there in the room. You can reach out to us at info@orgbahamas.com to let us know you're interested, and we'll get you set up. But fundamentally, this is the start, and there's lots of different opportunities. We run something called Freedom Schools, which is a grassroots civic education program, also free, that we will go into your community. We will hold virtual sessions, and it's a way to orient you to being involved in governance, understanding the system of government, but also finding your role and learning skills about how you can get involved.
Now, Matt, this is an easy conversation for you and I, right? I think we're born activists.
Right.
We come out the wound advocacy socks, right? But for other people, this could be a difficult conversation, particularly talking about engaging government practices, engaging civil servant culture, policies, right? Talk about good governance. People get frightened, you know, to the point where they can be so discomforted that they have a psychological response. This is ridiculous. What do you mean?
But the thing about it is, it's the language, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't call it good governance. But if you listen to folks talking on the street corner, if you watch what's happening on social media, on the WhatsApp chats, if you sit down and you're, you know, now that we're back in sitting down to eat and you can hear the person at the table next to you, they're complaining about that we're making the same mistakes, the same things keep happening. So the thing you read about in the newspaper today is kind of like something you would have read about 2 years ago, mm-hmm. or 4 years ago, or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the frustration that builds up around that is what I think causes that emotional reaction. So yeah. when somebody like Org or yourself comes forward and says, we talk about, you know, change and we put words on it that are kind of big or new or different, it seems something aside or something new. But the reality is, it's if we're going to answer the question of how do we stop making the same mistakes, the answer comes down to governance. Mm-hmm. It comes making sure that you not only have put the right people in place to lead, but that the system that we have, but that making a change that benefits you, your family, your neighbors, your friends. It shouldn't be a discussion that doesn't include citizens. It needs to include citizens. And the day-to-day person has a key role in expressing their frustration, but also offering their ideas.
Mm-hmm. A part of it is also fear.
Yeah.
Now, victimization mm-hmm. is a heavy word. And I think a lot of people are confusing victimization with bad, poor, and unsafe office practices, right? Like work culture mm-hmm. and work practices. But people are afraid of victimization and retribution, right? So here I am, a civil servant. I really want to learn more,
right?
Like you may be having a session that includes an assessment of the workplace, the Whistleblower Act,
right?
If we ever get it, right? But I know my boss could be... My boss could be at that session.
Right.
Can I get a burner account?
Right.
Can I register anonymously? How can I sort of engage mm-hmm. without having to identify my...
And I think that's a great example. We have a whistleblower protection in the Freedom of Information Act. It's one of the few parts that's been enacted. Mm-hmm. So on law, we have it saying that anybody who's in government that's asked to give information or told, matter of fact, don't give information they're supposed to give, can be protected and will not be recriminated against. So that's the law. And that's why we talk about this culture. Culture is different than just what's on the books. Culture is how it manifests. It's what you do and act day to day. So what have we done to support and build that environment? A lot of our fear, and our particular fear of recrimination, it not only exists in the actual things that do happen, but probably things that historically have happened or things we were afraid of happening. And when we think about the process of perpetuating that, we did a study, Transparency International did a study with Citizens for Better Bahamas back in 2018, and they found that I think 63% of Bahamians felt that if they said something about corruption, that there would be recriminations.
Mm-hmm.
In the same survey, though, 85% of Bahamians felt like citizens could actually do something to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And third stat out of that is that 14% of folk, we were the highest of people who reported in bribes when we hadn't even been asked. So that tells you that our culture that we've ingrained is one to say that the system is not going to work for us. We're better off going around. Don't even worry about asking me. I'm just going to figure out a way to do this. And that we do feel that we have a role, but that there could be pain against us if we do so. So we have to work against that. We have a procurement law that we just put in place that's being worked on and tailored to make it easy to reduce corruption in purchasing from in government contracting. We have a whistleblower's law, or that whistleblower's part of that law that protects and supports people in that. We have greater disclosure of information. And yet still, in the midst of this, we still have lots of folks who believe that things can't change, won't change, and that there's no examples. So we have to figure out how we reconcile what's actually happening with what people feel and believe and figure that process out.
Listen, because you know, this Bahamian, in Bahamian culture, is a couple of things you know, and one of them is Bahamians like a hookup.
Right.
In fact, we have become, what they call it, we are the inheritors of our own success mm-hmm. and future, right? That's what the preamble tells us. Inheritors of our own success and determination. We lead ourselves, and yet we bend over backwards for hookup.
Well, it's also, and we do, in our freedom schools, we talk about, it speaks to the fact that the country is for you. It's not that you're there for the country. It's the country that is oriented to make you successful, not to inhibit
right.
your
These
development.
These things are
right?
yours.
They're yours.
Why would you have to go around the corner to get access to the things that are yours? And now that we are in power, why are we perpetuating this culture, right? When we could just send our representatives to parliament to create or amend the law to provide access to those things that we are entitled to.
And this is key, right? What you pointed out is absolutely the most important thing. So we just did a whole campaign on integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we were calling out was the paying tips to get around lines, right? So
mm-hmm.
we know, you know, day-to-day person, you got to go to that government office and you have your lunch hour because your boss is sitting there waiting saying, get back, to get whatever is necessary done. And if that line is particularly long, you may find it very advantageous to find who you're related to or find the person that will take a few dollars on the side lunch money to be able to get you through that process. And in the moment, it's an understandable solution.
No, not just perfectly understandable. You are remiss if you don't teach your children how to get the hookup.
Right. But we all then are not thinking, not that we're not thinking, but we're not recognizing what the impact of that is to everybody else in that line who doesn't have a hookup. And what it also means to the people in the public service, where you have 9 people doing the job as they are supposed to, and one person who's got this additional level of salary for doing things the way they're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So we're creating a system that supports people to go around, and it ultimately means that the dollars that are taken out of your funds, your tax dollars, are not being used to benefit you. They're being used to benefit the few folks who either have the hookup or have the few extra dollars to throw.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the bulk of us. The bulk of us don't have those contacts, and hence we're left with a less beneficial product for us out of government services.
And not just that, we're left the victims of this psychological violence. And we're in this malaise where we're in our own country, the place where the only place where we can expect things, where we are entitled to things, and we're constantly being shown that this is not for us, that even though we have the right to it, we don't have what it takes to access these things. And it's psychologically.
And it undermines things so we see lots of new government services going online. So that means you shouldn't be standing in line somewhere, right? We have lots of services. We saw road traffic became a process mm-hmm. where it wasn't out of a book. It was now a digital process. We're starting to see these movements. We're starting to see a procurement law that's supposed to give objective information about who got bids. So that means it's fairer for more people to get bids. But if we don't get over our fear or the need to do what works for us day to day, we're gonna lose what ultimately was an investment of your tax dollars and what you probably voted the person in to do if we don't support it. So it has to work. That government needs to work effectively and change that culture, but so do we as citizens, and so does the private sector, to make sure that we have this rotation of all of us being on board to take the pain now, but benefit for it in the long run.
But equitably, there are too many of us that are taking and using opportunities that were intended to build our country.
Mm.
And we're taking those opportunities to create better citizens for other countries of our children. To create, right? We're preparing our children to go off and become citizens of other countries with the opportunities that are intended to build up our own country. Mark, I am all out of time, and I run hot just now, I can be honest. Man, you inspired me to stoke the fires of activism and social justice that's within me. And I think yesterday, was International Social Justice Day. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing I didn't remember because, you know, I may have forgotten that I live on a plantation, but more importantly, I may have forgotten that it's not mine alone. Mm. That this planet, this country, this experience is ours to share with each other. And despite where we are positioned in the political class, we still have an obligation to the whole to ensure that we all can enjoy this thing called the Bahamas. I hear the music producer. I just got just one more or two things I have to say. Dear Prime Minister, I know that you... I don't think you were at the National Violence Law Review Forum this weekend, but here's what I'm going to say to you. We're not comfortable with the recommendations coming out of that event being taken directly to Parliament. There's still lots more work to do. Trust me on that. There's still lots more work to do. Don't forget to pick up today's Guardian. You have to read the story. Teenager testifies, woman sold her into sex trafficking, because some of y'all don't believe it continues to happen in the Bahamas. Thank you to Bradley and Leanna from Abaco and all the way in Scotland for today's conversation. Good governance and science alliance. These are things that we should be focused on. Thank you again, Matt. Thank you to my producer. Stay tuned for Guardian Radio AM. I don't know who the host is today, but I know it's going to be exciting.
Hubert Edwards.
Oh, bup, it's going to be a good one. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.